Good afternoon. It's Thursday, the 18th of May, 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in the studio, Mike Robinson. And we're joined today by David Scott with Northern Exposure and, of course, reports from matters north of the border and elsewhere. Well, I'm smiling because the weather here in England is very sunny, in Devon at least, and just a few scattered showers, obviously April.
Yes. Indeed.
Well, the good news is that one of our viewers, listeners, has emailed us to say that he's just received his new photo license from DVLA. And he says they still have the dreaded Ring of Stars, but they now have the Union flag as well. That's an improvement, I suppose. So we just put over the top Brexit. What Brexit? If we've just managed to get the national flag back on our driving licences, that's probably huge progress, Mike, in the Brexit.
Absolutely. But I don't think we're going to get the Union flag on our military anytime soon. So let's get straight into that, because today is more foreign ministers' meetings in the EU, but this is particularly about defence. So strangely enough, it is called the foreign ministers' meeting, but it is the defence aspect of this. Defence Minister Earl Howe in the picture here in Brussels to meet with leaders from across Europe to discuss NATO and the EU working together. So this meeting was preceded by a meeting of the European Defence Agency Steering Board. But in the main meeting, they say they're going to take stock of the implementation of the EU global strategy in the areas of security and defence. Defence ministers will examine the implementation of initiatives agreed in the Council discussions of 6th of March 2017, and they're going to focus on the possibility of permanent structured cooperation, which they're calling PESCO, the possibility of a member state-driven coordinated annual review on defence, which they're calling CARD, strengthening the EU's rapid response tools, including EU battle groups. So we've got a new phrase now, EU battle groups, Brian, partnerships in the common security and defence policy, and the Council is expected to adopt conclusions on the implementation of the EU global strategy in the areas of security and defence. These conclusions and the Minister's discussion will feed into the implementation report due in June 2017. Well, Jens Stoltenberg was there because he can't stay away from Federica Mogherini. He has too much regard for her. And so he was there and they discussing EU-NATO cooperation, as he said. He said last December, NATO and the EU agreed on 42 concrete measures of cooperation, and they're going to review progress in the coming month. Brexit, Brian?
No Brexit. What we're witnessing is the continued EU military unification, which, of course, totally involves Britain's military. So there is absolutely no truth in the fact that Britain is breaking away from the European Union, because, as Theresa May and Michael Fallon know only too well, Britain was absolutely Britain's military has been dismantled to such an extent that it could be subsumed into the EU military. And we're now starting to see the Conservatives duck and weave as, of course, the truth now comes to the surface. And that's why, as you pointed out yesterday, and I believe the day before, Boris Johnson is saying that he's got to be very careful with the words he uses when he describes the EU military project.
Well, indeed, it was more than that, because it was they've got to be very careful with the words they use, so they're not allowed to call their HQ an HQ. But here they are bandying words like, or phrases like, EU battle groups. And the key point here, isn't it, Brian, is the point is that this is about NATO and EU cooperation, whereas many of these EU countries are already members of NATO. So what we're seeing is the creation of a new institution.
EU military structure.
Yes.
Complete with its headquarters, its procurement, and as Dave Ellis has quite rightly warned, with it comes the EU Treasury. So this is the biggest lie ever told, probably, by a Conservative government, with the exception of Ted Heath, but we'll come on to that another day. I thought it would be just fun to remind people of the slides you produced when Theresa was there announcing the election. I've just chaired a meeting of Cabinet. We agreed the government should call a general election to be held on the 8th of June. She was looking a little bit tired there. And this is the meat of it, isn't it? People believe that the government's just got a little majority. They need a big majority to make sure they can bulldoze through the complete lie of Brexit, make sure that the rest of Britain is dismantled. They need that majority. If you wonder what to vote, vote anything but Tory, in our opinion. And of course, Mike, you warned in a rather jovial way that the Conservatives were heading into really dangerous territory with a quick Zeke Hale there. Well, you weren't far wrong, because here's The Guardian reporting on the Conservative battle bus. This is the modern Conservative equivalent of a Panzer battle bus. Strong, stable leadership. That's straight out of Nazi Germany as well, I think, or somewhere in that region. And of course, here we get to reality, because the Tories were a little bit upset to find that there was a quite considerable group of demonstrators waiting for this particular bus up in the Midlands. And of course, what were most of the banners talking about? Cuts to the NHS and social care. Well, we've been warning and warning what was coming with Theresa May, because her version of social care is to imprison child abuse survivors and whistleblowers, of which Melanie Shaw has spent over 10 months, probably near 11 months in solitary confinement. Who put her there? Well, Theresa May in her former role as Home Secretary. But not to worry, because BBC is pushing out that Theresa has said that her mainstream government will deliver for mainstream Britain. So what's the caption from the BBC? Theresa May pledges a government, quote, that works in the interests of ordinary people, unquote. So we wondered whether this would be the first government that's going to work in the interests of ordinary people. And somehow I don't think so. And before I let her go, we just bring in this. We were shocked to read this Mail caption here. Theresa May said today she wanted to build a great judge meritocracy in Britain after Brexit. This was clearly a typo or a spelling mistake by the Daily Mail. And of course, according to Full Fact, that means that this whole article is fake news.
Yes.
Okay. Well, we better jump from that to putting the media on trial.
Well, indeed. So just another reminder, media on trial event being organised by Firm Stop War. Patrick Henningsen, Vanessa Bailey, Professor Piers Robinson, Robert Stewart, Professor Tim Hayward speaking at that Sunday, the 11th of June, 7 p.m. in Froome. Details on screen. You can freeze that, pause the video and note those down if you want to go. I do suggest that people go. Let's move on then to the Dochertys. David, you've been in contact with them, and you wanted to highlight this this location, because perhaps you're going to meet them with some other people soon.
Yes, the Dochertys are now in Scotland. So they're out of Ireland, and they are starting the long process of rebuilding their lives and continuing the fight to have their children returned. And what they need now more than anything else is friendship. They need people around them. They need not to be alone and not to be isolated. So to start that off, we've arranged a small get-together. We're meeting at the Riverside in Dunblane on Sunday at 12:30 for a drink, and then we'll go off somewhere to get a bite of lunch. I think the Riverside is a bit busy to cope with the number of people that we're expecting to be there. But we'll go off and get a bite of lunch, and that will give everyone a chance to meet the Dochertys. Give the Dochertys a chance to thank them for the support that's been coming in so generously over the last considerable number of months. It's about a year now since we started reporting on this case. And it will allow people to exchange phone numbers, make contacts, and so that if there is any moves by, say, Police Scotland against the Dochertys, there are people there to raise the alarm, to help, to offer support, and to help in all sorts of practical ways. Now, on the subject of interference from Police Scotland, the Dochertys did get some emergency assistance to get some housing from the local authority. So they're in bed and breakfast accommodation at the moment. The first night they were in there, Police Scotland came calling. This was a welfare check. They were just there to check on their welfare. So when Police Scotland were told that they didn't require any welfare checks and didn't wish to speak to the police, The Police Scotland reaction was to double the number of police officers at the scene and be there for several hours. But eventually that was diffused, and no more of that type of occurrence has happened. But we want to have people watching the performance of the authorities on this and making sure that there's no harassment of the Doherty's taking place.
They're harassed on their way out of Ireland and harassed as soon as they get into Scotland. It is an incredible situation, bearing in mind, as we remind everybody once again, they have never committed any offence, any crime. They've never been accused of committing any offence or any crime. Their only crime here is to make an allegation of attempted abuse against one of their children.
Yes, and let us remember just how that went down. Someone approached them, offered them £25,000 for access to their son. They reported that to the police. They believed they were dealing with a neighbour who was a builder. We immediately discovered information to suggest that he was in fact a police officer. It took us a long time to piece together the contrast between the Doherty's account. So they'd no idea of the identity of this man. And it wasn't until we had multiple confirmations that's one and the same man, they were actually dealing with a police officer, a serving police officer, a still serving police officer. And the people who were investigating their allegations were the associates, the close working associates of that police officer, a situation that Police Scotland have denied. And we have cast iron evidence that they are not telling the truth in this. So it's where that's coming from, whether we're seeing something that's undercover, we don't know. We don't have a full explanation. But it's from the start of this story, no aspect of the official response makes any rational sense unless there is corruption and foul play involved in official circles as well.
Sorry, if I can just come in very briefly here and just reiterate the fact that we, over the last few days, we have been getting some really excellent information and evidence about what's been happening in Sheffield. Sheffield, of course, a sanctuary city. And
what is a sanctuary city, for those who don't know?
Well, sanctuary cities, it's happening in UK, but it's also in the States. It's a worldwide phenomenon, which is basically cities are declaring that they are places of sanctuary for immigrants or refugees, people who are coming in from overseas under traveling under duress. Come to our city where you will receive sanctuary. And Sheffield has put itself up as being a leading city, as a sanctuary city. But what we're discovering is that the vulnerable children of these people seeking sanctuary are then being targeted, not only by people within their own communities, but when mothers in particular go for help, the identity of the mothers is then leaked back into the community where some of them have been attacked and or raped. And the attacks on the children are increased. And we know that there's collusion between social services and the police. So this is the picture in England. And we're getting a similar picture, of course, with the evidence that's coming out around the Doherty case and Holly Gregg, for example, that similar things are happening north of the border.
Well, David, let's look at a couple of other cases which may or may not be related to the Doherty case. Let's start off with Stefan.
Yeah, we talked about this first last week. This is a case which dates back several years to 2013. So Stefan Sutherland went missing on Friday, September the 6th, 2013, and was missing for a considerable period of time. There was no sign of him for 10 days.
Yeah, so the headline here in STV is that parents search for son who vanished into fresh air 10 days ago.
Yes. So he was out for an evening in the local town, the local pub, and this is the pub. He was Bayview Hotel. He was drinking here. He went to the house of another local after this, and was never seen alive again.
So he went missing from this street. Is that right?
Yes, this a house in this street. Now, this is Shelleygrove Road in Lobster, in Caithness, which is a small, originally fishing community, Caithness. A house in this street was the place he was last seen alive, and he vanished. Now, the investigation for this has always troubled a lot of the people in the area and his relatives, because from the outset there seemed to be a narrative being spun that it was suicide or it was accidental. There didn't seem to be a consideration of other options here. And then after 10 days, his body was found washed up on the shoreline. Now this is the location, which is just about visible from his parents' home. This is the location. It's a small beach on the rocky coast of Caithness. And his body, which was in a very bad condition, we'll maybe talk more about that in later weeks, just what the autopsy showed and the concerns over that aspect of the case. But his body was washed up there. And the implication of the police had been accidental. That was looked at. He was taking a shortcut home. He fell in. None of this made any sense. If you look at the lie of the land, accidental is not a shortcut. It's extremely rough terrain, middle of the night, moonless night. There would be no possibility of anyone taking that as a shortcut home. And the other concentration was in suicide, for which there is no evidence. No evidence, medical evidence, for example, that he was suicidal. Extremely thin anecdotal evidence, and that was kind of that. But the family and friends of Stephen were far from satisfied and pushed for further investigation, which did eventually take place. There was more investigation. So this is the Caithness
Courier,
John O'Groats Journal. Now, what they're saying, this was from 2014. So the police are reinvestigating the circumstances of the death of a young man whose body was found near his village home in Caithness over 4 months ago. So there's a long time has passed. At the time, Police Scotland said there were no suspicious circumstances surrounding the tragedy, but officers were seen yesterday visiting a house in Shelleygrove Road, which is the last place Stephen was seen alive. So it took them 4 months to visit that property. Locals reported seeing several individuals in white overalls, commonly deployed in forensic investigations, entering the council house, which is believed to be unoccupied. Now, that investigation did find Stephen Sutherland's blood on the walls of that house. But there's no suspicious circumstances, according to Police Scotland, or no evidence to follow. So we're very concerned about this case, and we're going to keep watching this case and reporting on it in the coming weeks. And we finish here with a poster, a photograph I took of a poster put up by his friends and relatives as they were looking for him and seeking information. And I hope that they get the satisfaction, closure and justice that they all deserve.
Well, let's just put this in a bit of geographic perspective. So this case is the north or the southern, one of the two rings on this.
It's the southern one. This is the Lobster and Ockhamster, is the southern point here on Caithness. And the northern ring there is Wick, which is the next case we're going to just look at. And there's only around 12 miles by road between the two places. They're very close. And in a sparsely populated rural area, you're talking virtually the one community where people will know one another. So it's extremely, in human terms, it's even closer. Yep. Now, this next case is Kevin MacLeod. Now, it's a slightly older case. This is from 1997. And Kevin MacLeod was found in Wick Harbour. And there's been a fatal accident inquiry which has returned an open verdict. And the general view from the police appears to be pushing the line of accidental death. Again, here the family and friends of this young man feel this is incorrect, that what we're actually looking at is murder and it's not been properly investigated. So we're now starting to see some movement. This is from 2017, February this year, where the police are reinvestigating or assessing Kevin McLeod's death. And it comments that the death was treated as accidental, but his family believe he was murdered. The new development in the case follows discussions between the McLeod family and Police Scotland's Chief Constable Phil Gormley. 24-year-old McLeod's family have consistently criticised the police for not investigating the death as a murder. In 2007, the Police Complaints Commissioner for Scotland said the Northern Constabulary behaved with, quote, institutional arrogance in the way they handled complaints from McLeod's parents, Hugh and June McLeod. So that is taking place there. Now, I've got one other... So we're also seeing sort of re-examination of the evidence. Now, this is again, from February 2017. There's been nothing in the mainstream press since, but we are going to keep an eye on the case and see if there are any other developments. Just before we leave this one for today, this is part of the open verdict from the fatal accident inquiry held in 1998 at Wick Sheriff Court, talking about the injuries that Kevin had sustained. So these injuries were sustained a relatively short time, probably less than 1 hour prior to his immersion in the water of the harbour. The severity was such that if untreated, they would themselves inevitably have proved fatal, and even if prompt surgical intervention had been available, survival would have been uncertain. The causation of the injuries has not been established. They were compatible with the deceased having been assaulted by a person or persons unknown, and that with great force, such as by kicking or kneeing. They were also compatible with the deceased having collided accidentally, but with great force against some object, such as the hemispherical top of one of the bollards, about 1 metre in height, situated at the harbour quay. The central issue in the inquiry was whether the deceased's abdominal injuries resulted from an assault or an unobserved accidental fall. The evidence led the fatal accident inquiry has proved insufficient to enable me to answer that question one way or another. All that I can conclude is that it has not been established that the deceased's very serious abdominal injuries resulted from his having been assaulted, but that remains a possibility. So that was the situation in 1998, and we will watch for developments on that.
And can we just emphasise there, really, David, the dangers of the situation in Scotland now, with absolutely no separation of powers between government and the police. And of course, you come back to the government appointing the so-called Independent Police Complaints Commission, as it is there in Scotland. So we're now starting to see where people die. There's no proper investigation, but when relatives or the public at large start to question it, you are simply coming up against a blank wall. While that is going on in Scotland, south of the border, we've now got calls for just one doctor to sign death certificates. And we are starting to see cases where clearly the coroners are not doing their job, but also where coroners are using staff from the local constabulary. So we've got no separation of powers between local authorities, police and coroners in England. This is very, very dangerous territory, because if you combine it with people being arrested in the middle of the night and taken off to unknown locations with the police, the next thing is they're found dead and we have no way of establishing what happened to them. Welcome to Britain in 2017. Under Labour and latterly Conservative government.
And SNP government. A couple of comments on this. In Scotland, we also have just one police force, Police Scotland, and there is a regulator over to provide oversight of that single police force to protect the public. And the current scandal in the press, covered by the excellent Peter Kirby, is the revelations that oversight body, the Scottish Police Authority, has been run as a secret society. The word Kremlin has cropped up more than once, and that's something that I would like to come back to next week and look at in detail, because what's coming out of that shows the nature of the rank-band practice and poor governance that seems to infect Britain these days.
Okay, well, let's move on to Scottish politics, David. And Press and Journal here saying Conservative activist reported to police after comparing young SNP campaigners to the Hitler Youth. So here are the young SNP campaigners. Was it a fair comparison?
It's unfortunate that the SNP, who are, let us, or at least claim to be a nationalist and socialist party, chose SNP Youth as the title for their youth wing. That was perhaps ill-advised. We seem in Scotland to be having a period of calling one another Nazis. This seems to be the insult of choice. So the Conservatives are calling the SNP Nazis, and the SNP are calling the Conservatives Nazis. As you see in this next picture here, this snapped in an Edinburgh window, an SNP supporting window, and you see Ruth Davidson, the head of the Scottish Conservatives, in Nazi regalia, standing in front of a swastika, which is hardly moderate. So that's the sort of nature of the debate. So everyone's calling everyone else a Nazi, but we're also now calling the police on one another. So about a week ago, there was an altercation between Scottish Conservatives canvassers or campaigners in a street, and apparently quite aggressive SNP demonstrators. So that got sufficiently heated that the police were involved. And now, because someone has said words which are hurtful about the SNP youth wing, the police are involved. I don't think any of this actually reflects well on Scottish politics. I don't think the police need to be wasting their time with any of this nonsense. And it's almost playground stuff, you know. He hurt my feelings. So we don't want that. Unfortunately, that's the nature of politics, though. Increasingly, he hurt my feelings has been becoming a major criminal act because of the nature of the politically correct background to all of these things. You must think the right way. You must say the right things. Otherwise, you are beyond the pale. You are criminalised by having the wrong sort of thoughts. So we're seeing this lack of toleration creeping ever more into what was, certainly when I grew up, a very tolerant country.
I'm sure this is all Russia's fault, David.
Oh, I blame Putin for everything, but I still drink at Putin's in Jerusalem because it's the best pub in town. So there are some things that you will stick with.
Okay.
All right. Well, nearly a final. Well, it will be a final advert for AV8 coming up. There are still some day tickets available. If you haven't got tickets, you're coming very close to the edge now. So it will be a really interesting event. If you've never been to a AV Alternative View conference before, I'm sure you will enjoy it. So if you haven't got a ticket, please get one.
Right. Let's move on to Trump. Things continuing to build in Trump with more and more calls for impeachment. And the Independent today, in fact, were writing their own articles on what the implications of impeachment were, how impeachment will happen and all this kind of stuff. So it's all about impeachment, total hysteria. But in the meantime, we've got the Financial Times here saying US says Syria using crematorium to hide mass killings. This is a spectacular article because, of course, what they're attempting to do is to invoke the memory of Holocaust. Who's behind it? It's the deputy Secretary of State, who, of course, is a guy called Stuart Jones. And he said that we believe that the building of a crematorium is an effort to cover up the extent of mass murders taking place in Sadnaya prison. Jones himself is a sort of hangover from, he's a career diplomat, a career civil servant in the United States. He's a hangover from the Obama administration. He's pretty much anti-Trump. And we should point out that the United Nations to date have not yet suggested that this is the case. They are saying that there's no evidence for it yet. Not even the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights is suggesting this at this point. This is coming from one man in the U.S. State Department. David, it's increasingly apparent that there is a massive civil war going on within the U.S. establishment at the moment because they seem to despise Donald Trump so much.
There seems to be an attempt to take him down, that's for sure. That seems to be at least partially successful. They got him to launch the missiles on what appears to me to be fake news, certainly unsubstantiated, certainly not sufficiently certain, not sufficiently robust to start launching missiles and killing people. A terrible decision by Donald Trump.
Well, I have to agree with that, but we gotta see where it goes next, I suppose.
Yes, but this is only a small fraction of where he's being pushed to go, of where we would be going if Hillary had won, and that place is a war in Syria, a war for Syria, and a war that will involve Russia and Iran and major players, and will entirely destabilize the world. It won't just destabilize Syria. We're talking about people who are willing to take enormous risks with the safety of millions, or indeed billions of innocent people, and do so based on the certain assumption that they are right and that their personal interests are so overwhelmingly important that the loss of life, particularly life far away, is of no importance. That's what's being pushed, and the agenda that's trying to push Trump is laughable. You know, the Russia connection, the leaks to Russia, Russia hacked our election, Donald Trump as Russian agent. This is laughable stuff. You couldn't make it up.
Yeah, but David, we've got to remember where that's coming from. Of course, that's coming from Mr. Steele, allegedly ex security services, MI6. Is he ex that? I don't know. But so this is Britain pushing this?
Well, interests that don't really recognise the difference between Britain and America, I think. These are transatlantic interests. These are the interests of the Trilateral Commission of other supranational bodies such as this. It's not to say it's Britain or America is probably too narrow. It's interests that seek to control large swathes of the planet, including Britain and America.
Well, let's look at what Putin had to say. Political schizophrenia is developing in the United States. I cannot see any other explanation for the accusations against the current president. He said, if the U.S. administration considers it appropriate, we're ready to provide the U.S. Senate and Congress with the transcript of the talks between Lavrov and Trump. He said that those who spread allegations like this are either stupid or dangerous, that basically the United States is committing suicide by behaving in this way. They destabilize the intra-political situation in the United States using anti-Russian slogans. They either do not understand that they bring in this rubbish themselves, or they understand everything, and then they're dangerous, dirty people. But in any case, this is the business of the United States in which we do not intend to interfere and will not do so. And he said, of course, that Lavrov hadn't shared the information that Trump had allegedly given him, that this was very bad, and he was going to deliver a reprimand to Lavrov. So even as all this is going on around there, and all this buzzing around the Russians' heads that it's all their fault, their response generally is to make fun of the situation. And I think that's a pretty positive place to be.
The sense of humour shown by Putin and by the Russian embassy has been one of the most excellent parts, and there's not been much excellence to find in this whole affair. And as well as the gentle mockery, which it richly deserves, at least on the surface, the fact that he's raising the great concern over how destabilising this is, not only internationally but within the American border, and how bad it is for the coherence of a country to try and run this degree of division into your political system and into your nation, is a point well made, and it's a degree of division that we've seen in Britain. Now the wounds over Brexit have healed. I don't know if you caught the polls. The support for staying inside the EU has really rather collapsed. People seem reasonably settled with we're going to exit the EU, as they believe. And there is no need to have a hugely divisive campaign going on about that in Britain, but the campaign goes on nonetheless.
What I would say to that is just watch this space. In the possibly unlikely situation that Jeremy Corbyn were to become Prime Minister, I think we would find British politics turning into a very similar situation under those circumstances.
Indeed. Well, if I just mention a couple of subjects before we start the next segment. We're talking about crematoria being in place to cover up crimes. Of course, I remember in Scotland there was the little problem of the disappearing baby ashes, which was flagged up as a problem because nobody quite knew what was happening with the babies or their ashes. But if I remember correctly, it was, Eilish Angelini who was called in to help solve that little problem. And she did an investigation and a report. And of course, there was nothing awry at all. Secondly, driving home yesterday afternoon, I was intrigued to be listening to Radio 4, which had a special feature programme all about the horrors of the Russian prison system. And they began by saying that, of course, Russia was number three in relation to numbers of prisoners held, with China and America winning the first two places. But the rest of it was the BBC onto every aspect of that nasty Russian prison system, which was holding people in solitary confinement, which wasn't feeding them properly, which wasn't allowing them visitors. In Britain, as we speak, we've got prisoners held in precisely the same conditions: denial of medication, harassment, bullying, but no emeritus ladies from Oxford University working with the BBC to solve those problems. Well, have a look at this. We just touched on it yesterday. Russia Today warning about the fact that Russian and British special forces were starting to get a little bit too close, and they were saying that the distance is now about 15 miles. And of course, where can this lead? Somewhere extremely serious. We just wanted to say, and we can only use the word chatter, but we are picking up chatter that British Special Forces are not happy with the way that they're being used in Syria. They are not happy that they're being put into immensely dangerous positions. And of course, they are no longer up against, we'll say, third world forces. They know only too well that just down the road, they're up against professional Russian forces. So mainstream media in UK not talking about this at all. But the hard fact of the matter is that Britain has committed military forces into Syria. But we've only got to go back to 2015 when we had Mr. Fallon himself saying that actually putting troops into Iraq or Syria would be helping the terrorists. I think putting ground troops into Iraq or Syria would help the ISIL narrative. It would help further radicalise its potential supporters by showing it was foreign armies being sent to deal with ISIS. But surprise, surprise, we've now got British troops actually put in on the ground by the same Mr. Fallon. We better remember what David Cameron was saying in 2015. Of course, if we're going to succeed in defeating ISIL, either in Iraq or Syria, there will need to be boots on the ground, but they should be Iraqi boots or Syrian boots. So total hypocrisy by Mr. Cameron there. Let's remember, we now got British military boots on the ground in Syria. He went on to say, what we need is an Iraq that's capable of governing its own country, Iraqi government that is capable of governing its own country. The same goes in Syria. It's more complicated, but the government of Syria in the form of Bashar Assad is the chief recruiting sergeant for ISIL because of his butchery of his own people. So wonderful words by former leading Conservative Party representative Cameron. Bring in Theresa May, sort of prime minister at the moment. She declined to rule out ground forces. This is also from 2015, while stressing the debate was over extending airstrikes, but parliamentary approval would be needed for any such move, forces on the ground. So sheer hypocrisy by Theresa May there. And then we better just add this to David Cameron. Had been speaking to the Knesset in where he said, so let me say to you very clearly, with me, you have a British Prime Minister whose belief in Israel is, quote, unbreakable, unquote, and whose commitment to Israel's security will always be rock solid. So my question is the Syria policy at the moment British policy, or is it actually the British government undertaking Israeli foreign policy? David, I don't know whether these matters get discussed in the Putin pub, but perhaps you could say what you've heard.
Everything gets discussed in the Putin pub. That's the joy of the Putin pub. At least it does when I'm there. The nature of Western foreign policy in the Middle East since 2001 has been a non-stop train wreck. Right? We were mostly taken in over Afghanistan, but we now know that that was not what it appeared. Iraq was nonsense, and the people saw it for what it was from the get-go. And then everything else that falls thereafter, including the attack on Libya, on Syria, and it will be eventually Iran, it would seem. So where does that take the West? Does that help the West in any way, shape or form? It doesn't. It can't do. So where's it going? The view that it helps Israel, well, it certainly does, at least in a short-term sort of way. It's very concerning when you see the number of people who are in our government, the Conservative Friends of Israel, who are running back and forward to Tel Aviv and to Jerusalem, assuring them that they have Israel's best interests at heart. Now, where those conflict with Britain's self-interests, what happens?
We don't know.
It would appear that what happens is we put boots on the ground in Syria.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Jeremy Corbyn in the Labour Party manifesto said that he wants the Labour Party to become, or Britain to become, the leader globally in dealing with climate change once again. Today, the Commonwealth is up to it. They are introducing their revolutionary approach to climate change, and they're holding a conference this week, yesterday, today and tomorrow, to see how they can take forward, as they describe it, an innovative strategy to reverse the human impact of climate change. And this is following on from the UN Climate Change Conference, COP23. They've got a whole bunch of people speaking there, more than 60 scientists, ecologists, activists, academics, funders, exploring cutting edge technologies. They're going to have Mary Robinson there, who is the Secretary General Special Envoy on Climate Change. They're going to have New York best-selling climate change author Paul Hawken, and various other people. This is what Baroness Scotland had to say. Commonwealth Climate Finance Access Hub assists countries with building long-term capacity to access climate funds. And that's what this is all about. It's about giving money for projects. Absolutely soft power coming in here. She said some Commonwealth countries face obliteration as a result of rising sea levels. So they've got to deal with it by throwing some money at them. And of course, it's going to be pushing the civil society organisations to push the climate change agenda. And while we stick with this kind of subject, if you remember last week or a week or two ago, we highlighted the fact that Common Purpose was running the Diaspora Dialogues, which they described as would bring together leaders from diaspora across the world, leaders who are familiar with operating in multiple cultures and geographies, leaders who connect global and local, having spent their whole lives with their feet in multiple places. Well, we begin to get a clue as to what this is about, because here's one of their tweets today. Our diaspora leaders went out on visits yesterday to understand their challenge further. Thank you, all visits, for hosting us. And of course, who's the main protagonist there?
I think I can spot the BBC roughly there, Mark.
Absolutely. So they go running off to the BBC. Now, what's interesting is that who else did they go running off to? Well, they went running off to Muslim Aid UK, which they are tweeting out today. They're currently discussing opportunities and challenges on working with local partners in Syria with diaspora leaders from Common Purpose UK. So here is direct evidence that Common Purpose operating in Syria. What is Muslim Aid UK? Well, first of all, it's a bit strange because you go to the website and go to the Where We Work section, and there's no mention of Syria. But elsewhere on the website, they say that Muslim Aid is supporting a large hospital in northern Syria, close to the Turkish border. It sees over 14,000 patients every month, people affected by one of the worst humanitarian crises and conflicts of our times. Well, let's just remember that if the hospital is close to the Turkish border, then who is it going to be helping? It's going to be helping ISIL and al-Nusra Front and that type of individual. So that's what we seem to have now, common purpose working with charities that are pumping money into terrorist-held areas in Syria.
And I've got to say, Mike, one of the worst things is, of course, that these people, maybe we could say that their ideology is wrong. We could put them one side of the friendly terrorist line or the other side. But what Common Purpose is ultimately doing is to destroy their identity, their social, their nation's identity. So this is the bit that I find most wicked about this political charity, is that their ultimate objective is to destroy the identity of the very countries where they encourage people to mix and come together.
And where do Common Purpose leaders quite often end up working? But they end up working for NGOs. And of course, in Syria, we have a huge problem of child trafficking, sexual slavery as a result. Greek news here reporting that the EU has, this is the only mainstream source I could find for this so far, EU funding has been suspended from an NGO, an unnamed NGO at the moment, following reports, claims of sexual abuse and corruption. So although these remain allegations under investigation, the spokesperson said the Commission is taking them very seriously. We take a zero tolerance approach to any abuse of the rights and personal integrity of all refugees and migrants, as well as any misuse of funds. Our primary concern is the welfare of potential victims. Accordingly, we shall ensure an immediate support is provided to them. Of course they will, but nonetheless, they haven't named the NGO at this point in time. We'll wait and see who that is.
We will. And we better just end on this one because the Telegraph here reporting that Rolf Harris is going to be released. I think that's tomorrow, actually. So what's he going to be doing? Well, he's going to be back in court or facing another set of charges. We just like to say, isn't it interesting? Rolf Harris commits abuse. He's now out. Melanie Shaw subjected to abuse. She stays in. And this is what we can expect under conservative social care. So I'll just say once again, if you're unsure what to do in this election, either choose the individual that you're going to vote for over and above any party label. But at the end of the day, vote anything but Tory, because we are watching a conservative dictatorship install itself. David, 30 seconds to close.
We have a situation where there's an attack on identity, an attack on identity to remove both the identity with the family, identity with the nation, and that's on building on top of an attack on faith. These leave huge voids in the life of people, and something rushes in to fill that void. My concern is that the thing that rushes in will be very threatening and will be very dark. And I think that is what we're seeing evidence of.
Okay, thank you for that. Well, we're ending there. And as I say, remember, we will be back with you on Tuesday, the 23rd of May. So tickets for AV8 still available. Hope to see you there if you have got a ticket. And of course, this is all part of it. It's not watching and just being an observer of what's happening in UK and worldwide. It's up to all of us to stand up and be counted and to do something to stop what's happening. Speaking out is one of the easiest and best things you can do. And as we often say, action conquers fear. So don't be shy. Stand up and be counted. It opens up a wonderful world. Thanks for joining us. We will see you Tuesday. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.